Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, truckie.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other truckie.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back, or if you're new here, hi, welcome. My name's Georgia, and on my platforms here on the internet, I focus on unsolved true crime. Missing people, murdered people, unidentified people, just raising awareness. I've been covering true crime on the internet for the past 5 years, maybe even 6 years now, and some of you will have been with me since the very beginning of that journey. And one of the things I feel quite passionately about is not just covering a case and then moving on, not just forgetting about it. We're in this for the long haul, guys, which means that I like to keep an eye on cases and every so often film an updates video where I tell you about all the latest things that have been going on in cases we've already talked about. It's actually been a minute since I last filmed a case updates video for you guys, and I do have a lot of cases to talk about. There are some amazing advances being made in some cases that a decade ago you might have thought would remain cold forever. Today I have some huge updates for you in the Lisk/Gilgo Beach case, Stephen Lawrence, Tara Calico, Susie Lamplew, and even more. Advances in forensic tech and genealogy really are changing the game when it comes to unsolved cases. So the first update we're going to jump straight into today is something huge in the Tara Calico case. I said in my last updates video, I think, that there were movements happening in this case, that at the time it seemed to be more of a rumour than anything solid, but it looks like I was wrong when I said that. That was much more than a rumour. As a very quick overview, Tara Calico disappeared from near her home in Belen, New Mexico on September 20th, 1988. She'd headed out for a bike ride on her own, and she is widely believed to have been kidnapped. And then, almost a year later, a Polaroid photo of an unidentified woman and boy was found in Port St. Joe in Florida, and this woman looked suspiciously like Tara, and her mother agreed. For many years, there hasn't really been much said publicly about suspects in this case, but in mid-June 2023, the Valencia County Sheriff's Office held a press conference regarding substantial progress made in this investigation. They didn't really release any information around what this new progress could be, but they did say they had enlisted the help of the FBI, and together they had leveraged their collective resources to further this investigation. The sheriff said that he believes there is sufficient information to submit this investigation to the district attorney's office for review of potential charges, which suggests that they very much do have a person of interest, a suspect that they're looking at here. However, the identity and specifics of this person is sealed by the courts and will remain so until a court orders otherwise. After 35 years, finally, there is significant movement in Tara's case. It just goes to show that it's never too late. There's always a chance for justice. Never ever give up on these cases just because they're old. The Valencia County Sheriff ended his official statement by saying, "In the coming months, the Valencia County Sheriff's Office looks forward to working with prosecutors to obtain justice for Tara and her family." Now, I have no doubt there's going to be a lot more information coming out about this over the coming months. This announcement was only made a number of weeks ago, and we all know how slow the justice system can be, so we've kind of just got to be patient and wait for more information to come out. I assume this information will come out eventually, but they might choose to continue keeping everything as under wraps as possible, so we don't know. We can't rely on anything. Authorities have said over the years that a light-coloured pickup truck with an attached camper shell was seen close behind Tara at one point as she was cycling back towards her home. This camper may or may not have had something to do with her disappearance. Maybe they've finally been able to positively identify the driver, but for this to be put in front of the DA's office, I can only assume the investigators here do have something pretty solid. Probably something they've been keeping back from public knowledge for all these years. It may well even be forensics that have led to the breakthrough here, but we don't know. I'm going to be crossing my fingers this really is the major breakthrough that it seems to be, and I'll be keeping a very close eye on updates going forward. I have a fairly similar update for you in the case of Susie Lamplew, an estate agent who went missing from Fulham in London on the 28th of July 1986. Susie was officially declared dead, presumed murdered in 1993, and the last clue as to what may have happened to her was an appointment to show a house to a man called Mr. Kipper. Now, Susie's case is still considered unsolved, but there's always been a very strong suspect in her murder, in the form of John Cannon, a convicted murderer and rapist who was known to be in the area at the time of her disappearance. At the time in the 80s, investigators failed to further investigate Cannon. It wasn't really until the 2000s that he was really looked at as a genuine suspect. Witnesses came forward saying they'd seen him hanging around Susie's office on the day she disappeared. His nickname in prison had been Mr. Kipper because he wore Kipper-style ties. He's always been a very good suspect in this case, but there's been insufficient evidence to ever actually charge him. However, at the beginning of July, it was reported by the Mirror that officers have launched a forensic review of this case. They're looking at hairs, fibres and body tissue samples found in Susie's car. Investigators also found a smudged fingerprint on the rearview mirror that they believe could potentially belong to the killer. They were able to extract a small amount of DNA from this fingerprint all the way back in 2000, but at the time it wasn't enough to give a profile of who it belonged to. But now, it's 2023, there have been incredible leaps forward in forensic tech over the past few years, and now it is possible they could get a full profile. However, the concern is that in the testing process, this tiny amount of DNA could be destroyed, and it is literally all the forensic evidence they have in this case. Testing has to wait until they know it's going to work, and it does seem now is that time. But it's probably important to note that all of this is just being reported by papers across the internet. Scotland Yard itself has remained very tight-lipped. They're refusing to say whether the materials are indeed being re-examined. All a spokesman told the Mirror was that the investigation is still active, with the most recent forensic review being this year. So still, there's nothing solid, and let's say they do manage to get a full DNA profile from this tiny amount of evidence, there's nothing to say right now that is 100% going to be that of the perpetrator. Although we can assume they ruled it out as belonging to Susie herself and anyone close to her or who might have been in the car in the weeks before her death. You've got to assume that they haven't been able to pinpoint who else this fingerprint could belong to, so there's a chance it could belong to the perpetrator. Although then again, the fingerprint was very smudged, so maybe they haven't been able to figure out who it belonged to. We just don't have the information available to the public right now. John Cannon, still the main suspect, has been in prison since 1989 for murder, rape, abduction, and attempted kidnap in cases separate from Susie's. He suffered a stroke last year, and in June 2022, it was announced that he was receiving palliative care. He was on his deathbed. However, it seems he was able to survive. He is no longer in the medical wing. He's actually due to have a parole hearing in September, which would sort of pave the way for his release in the next couple of years. And so it seems that this sudden push in forensic testing is probably to block that from happening. They want to finally get him for Susie's murder. This is not a man who should be released from prison. However, as always, it is innocent until proven guilty. They might strongly suspect he is the man responsible, but without solid evidence all these years later, they're not going to be able to convict him of anything. But let's move on to yet another update in the Madeleine McCann case. It wouldn't be one of my case updates episode without mentioning Madeleine McCann. Now, I have a couple of different points to touch on here. I don't think I ever updated on the whole Julia situation, and there's also finally an update on the reservoir search that took place a couple of months ago. Search teams spent 3 days in May searching the Barragem de Araje reservoir in the Algarve in Portugal at the request of German investigators. Now, this spot is about 30 miles from where Madeleine disappeared, and Christian Bruckner, who German investigators believe to be responsible, is said to have referenced this spot as his little paradise. There was also reason to believe that he travelled to this spot at the same time as Madeleine's disappearance in 2007. However, German public prosecutor Hans Christian Wolters did tell a German newspaper not to expect too much, so I get the idea they weren't expecting to find anything going in, they just sort of hoped that they would do. The search focused on the land near the reservoir before investigators turned to the lake. They chopped down trees and hacked away the undergrowth, they dug holes 2 foot deep. They were looking for something. Now, we don't know if that something was specifically a body or just evidence of any kind. It was reported that Portuguese police uncovered a number of items in their 3-day search that were going to be analysed over the following weeks, but now it has been revealed that no compelling evidence was found. They found nothing. Bruckner remains in prison on an unrelated rape charge. He has penned multiple letters in prison denying having anything to do with Madeleine's disappearance. But a former friend has claimed that he confessed to kidnapping Madeleine to her, telling the group that apparently Madeleine didn't scream. He's also a known criminal, a known paedophile who was staying in the area when Madeleine disappeared. But I suspect, without any solid evidence in this case, they're not actually ever going to be able to confirm that he was the one responsible. But that is not the only update I have for you in this case. Some of you may recall a 21-year-old Polish woman called Julia Wendel, who attempted to convince the world that she was Madeleine McCann early this year. Her Instagram account, on which she originally made these claims, went viral. She claimed to have very limited childhood memories, no photos of her mother pregnant with her, and she said her parents were very unwilling to share about her past. She also has a defect in her eye, which was very similar to what Madeleine had. Comparison photos did kind of, I suppose, match up. All of this went on for quite a while until Julia was taken to the USA under the wing of PI and celebrity medium Dr. Fia Johansson.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help. You save.
There she underwent a DNA test, or like, kind of. Basically, her parents refused to share their own DNA, so her DNA couldn't be tested against theirs. However, what they did was test for her heritage, and they found that Julia was Polish, with some Lithuanian and Romanian. The McCanns, and subsequently Maddie, have a long line of British heritage. Julia seemed to eventually accept this as her answer. They had different heritage, she couldn't be Madeleine, and she shared a statement on Facebook saying that it was never her intention to bring sadness or any other negative emotion to anyone, especially to the McCann family, whilst also claiming that she never said she was Madeleine, just that she could be. She wrote, "I don't remember most of my memories, but I can remember some things, and I never said that I am Madeleine McCann. I used this sentence to create a nickname for my own Instagram account. It was my mistake and I know it and I apologise for that because I should have used words, am I Madeleine McCann, instead of I am Madeleine McCann. My main purpose was always to find out who I am and what exactly happened in my very hurtful past." However, again, Julia did say she still believes there is a possibility she could be Madeleine, so yeah. A spokesperson for the McCanns responded, saying there isn't anything to report at this time. If and when there is, it will come from the Metropolitan Police. But this update doesn't end there, it just gets even more wild. So after Dr. Johansson sent Julia back to Poland after receiving the negative result, she reported Julia to the Orange County Sheriff's Department in California, handing over a phone that Julia allegedly left behind. She alleged that it contained a number of explicit images of children, as well as evidence that Julia was encouraging young girls to join sex platforms. However, Julia has vehemently denied this phone was hers. She said that Dr. Johansson is trying to scare her, and she's not sure that she ever truly wanted to help, which I don't really think is news to anyone. It very much seemed like Dr. Johansson was just hopping on the bandwagon for 5 minutes of fame, but that's just my own opinion. How much could she have helped truly if Julia did actually turn out to be Madeline? I don't really think she could have done much. I just truly hope that now Julia is getting the help that she needs, because clearly something is going on. Next up, I have a small update in the Emmett Till case. Sadly, nothing huge, but very important nonetheless. Carolyn Bryant Donham, the woman who accused 14-year-old Emmett of making improper advances on her, has died aged 88 in April. In August 1955, Emmett was visiting relatives in Mississippi from Chicago when he allegedly propositioned Carolyn in a shop. Carolyn went home to tell her husband, Roy Bryant, and her brother-in-law, J.W. Milam, who several nights later would abduct and lynch Emmett, leaving his body in the Tallahatchie River. Emmett's mother, Mamie Till Bradley, would make the decision for her son to be buried in an open casket, allowing the world to see what racism, the racial codes of the Deep South, had done to her son. His body was unrecognisable. The photos published of Emmett in his coffin shocked the country, and it became a very important conversation within the civil rights movement. The two kidnappers were arrested, but they were quickly acquitted by an all-white jury after testifying that Emmett had grabbed Carolyn's hand and propositioned her. However, they admitted their guilt in a magazine article several months later. In a 2008 interview for an unpublished memoir, Carolyn claimed that her trial testimony was fake. She said Emmett had never propositioned her at all, although her family denied that she had ever recanted the testimony. When speaking directly to investigators, she also denied having lied at trial. Regardless, her version of events did undeniably change over the years. For years, people have been calling for Carolyn Bryant to pay for her part in what happened to Emmett, and just last year, an unserved warrant for her arrest from 1955 was uncovered. In February, Emmett's cousin, Patricia Sterling, filed a federal lawsuit seeking Carolyn's arrest, trying to get the LaFleur County Sheriff's Office to see through the warrant. However, a grand jury declined to indict. And then Carolyn died in April, putting to bed any chance of Emmett's surviving family ever seeing any form of justice, which is all they've ever wanted. With her dead now, I'm not sure what the next step is to take, if there are any they can take. Carolyn got to grow old, Emmett never got the opportunity. And a case I have a frustratingly similar update in is that of Stephen Lawrence, who was killed in Eltham in southeast London on the 22nd of April 1993. Similar to Emmett's murder, this was a racially motivated crime that led to a huge conversation around the Met Police's attitude to racism. Now, David Norris and Gary Dobson were convicted of Stephen's murder 19 years after the fact in 2012, whilst Luke Knight and Neil and Jamie Acourt have long been suspects but always denied involvement. Neil Acourt and Luke Knight were acquitted of the murder in 1996. That's five people. However, Dwayne Brooks, who was with Stephen when he got attacked, has always said there were six attackers. The descriptions of the man who seemingly led the attack and was the first one to touch Stephen doesn't match any of the five suspects here, and other eyewitnesses agree. So who was this sixth person? The Met officially stopped looking into Stephen's murder 3 years ago, but BBC correspondent Daniel de Simone continued looking into it himself. On the 26th of June 2023, the BBC publicly named their sixth suspect, Matthew White. Reading directly from De Simone's article, "I traced witnesses, saw police documents, and uncovered new evidence that showed how officers mishandled investigations relating to White. The BBC has found that witnesses told detectives White has said he was present during the attack, and has uncovered evidence that shows his alibi was false. For the first time, police surveillance photos from 1993 are published, in which White is depicted bearing a striking resemblance to eyewitness descriptions of the unidentified attacker. But at key moments, the police failed to pull together all these pieces of evidence on White. Although the BBC report claimed that Matthew White was the new sixth suspect, Sir Mark Rowley, the head of the Met Police, has rejected the claims that he is a new suspect. He did say that though the murder investigation was irreparably damaged by egregious errors made in the first few weeks, the sad truth is that if you do a bad job at an investigation in the first weeks and months, you lose evidence. Some of it can never be recovered. You miss forensic opportunities, you miss witness opportunities, and witness memories degrade. I don't want to pretend that you can necessarily always catch up the ground that you've so badly lost in the early days. That's what makes it so egregious, makes the error so egregious, that they're not repairable always. And some really top detectives have moved heaven and earth to try and cover some ground and have made some progress, but haven't been able to recover at all. I always keep hoping that we'll find a new opportunity, but I'm not going to promise that we definitely will because I can't. It seems that whilst Matthew White has always been on the Met's radar, for the most part he's been a witness rather than a suspect, and he stood as a witness at the trial of Norris and Dobson. But on the other hand, the Met has confirmed they have arrested White twice in connection with Stephen's murder in 2000 and 2013, and that those files were sent to the Crown Prosecution Service in 2005 and 2014 respectively. On both occasions, prosecutors said there was no realistic prospect of conviction. One of the witnesses, White's stepfather, wasn't spoken to by police for 20 years because officers had misidentified him. A massive witness, and memories degrade over 20 years. So honestly, I don't really know what's going on here. A routine forensics review is currently taking place in the hope that they might unearth new evidence with advanced tech. I don't know what they're hoping for, but I can tell you that Matthew White actually died in 2021, aged 50. So even if he is found to have something to do with Stephen's murder, he'll never face justice. But it could be another piece of the puzzle coming together, something Lady Doreen Lawrence, Stephen's mother, would greatly appreciate. She said that she is furious that White will never face justice because of police mistakes. And there were a lot of mistakes in this case. For the last 2 years, the Crown Prosecution Service has been trying to decide whether the errors made in the first weeks of the investigation constituted a criminal offence of misconduct in public office. The four detectives in charge of the inquiry have all since retired, and the errors they made meant that despite local people repeatedly and openly naming the suspects in this case, despite it being very clear who was responsible, it took 19 years for any kind of justice be brought. However, at the beginning of July 2023, it was decided they will not face charges. The investigation has cost more than £7 million. It began in 2014, looking into claims that the killers were shielded by police corruption. But then in 2018, it began examining why the officers didn't make any arrests for 2 weeks after the killing, despite repeatedly being given the names of the suspects. This decision by the Crown Prosecution Service not to press charges means there were 9 years of investigations that haven't led to a single charge. Nothing. Lady Lawrence, Stephen's mum, has said that she's going to seek a review of the CPS's decision not to prosecute, saying they've caused her immense distress. She said, "Not a single police officer has been disciplined or will be charged. In my opinion, the police have, yet again, got away scot-free. Not a single police officer lost his job or will lose his pension or pay a fine or spend a day behind bars, whilst I will continue to grieve the loss of my son." This case is sadly broken beyond repair. The Met Commissioner, again Sir Mark Rowley, said that efforts to hunt down the remaining suspects again have been irreparably damaged. People were so bad at their job that they lost evidence, they lost forensic opportunities. It's painful.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In a quiet Chicago suburb, a star wrestler goes missing weeks before his high school graduation. shattering his mother's carefully curated image of the perfect family. Upstanding Young Man by Sharon Doering is a pulse-pounding thriller with complicated family dynamics, perfect for fans who love suspense. NYT bestselling author Reed Farrell Coleman describes it as tense, evocative, and surprising. Upstanding Young Man grabs you and won't let go. Available now wherever books are sold.
Moving on, I have a smaller update in the Tylenol murders case. The prime suspect in the deaths of seven people in 1982 caused by cyanide-laced Tylenol died towards the beginning of this month. James W. Lewis was 76 years old and authorities responded to reports of an unresponsive person in his home, and the cause of death is not considered to be suspicious, but there's no more information available around that. Lewis spent four decades under the watchful eye of the authorities in connection with the Tylenol murders, but he was never charged and he also denied any involvement in them at all. However, in October 1982, he sent a letter to Johnson & Johnson, the manufacturer of Tylenol, saying that he would stop the murders if they paid him $1 million. The postmark on the letter showed that it had been written before the public knew the deaths were linked to tainted Tylenol. So the question has always been, if he wasn't responsible, how did he know to contact Johnson & Johnson? Obviously, he was caught for the letter after it asked that the money be placed in a non-active bank account belonging to his former employer. He was convicted for extortion in 1983, going on to spend 12 years in federal prison for the crime. After his conviction, he told prosecutors he would help them solve the murders though, providing them with a great volume of documents as to his theories about what happened, but still, he denied any involvement in them. Prior to all of this, in 1978, Lewis had been charged with a murder in the death of Raymond West, a 72-year-old man from Kansas City who hired him as his accountant. Mr. West's dismembered and decomposed body was found hanging in his attic the same day that Lewis tried to cash a forged check on his account. The case was ultimately dismissed though because the police failed to inform Lewis of his rights at the time of his arrest. In 1983, he was convicted on six counts of mail fraud. He's been considered a prime suspect in the Tylenol murders for all of these years. In 2009, FBI agents executed a search warrant at his condo, and then in 2010, he released a self-published novel entitled Poison, The Doctor's Dilemma. Really not helping himself there. Just last year, in 2022, investigators interviewed him once more, hoping that they could finally crack the case, but of course, it didn't lead to anything. Now, Lewis, of course, was only ever a suspect. He very well may not have been responsible, and I hope that with his death, any chance of justice hasn't been destroyed. It does look like investigators are very much still trying to get to the bottom of this case. They want to find justice for the seven people who lost their lives. Next, I have three updates in cases that are very close to my heart, cases that I worked with loved ones on to make my original videos. I obviously try and keep track of updates in all the cases I cover, but particularly in cases where I've made a personal connection to family members or friends, like I'm personally rooting for positive updates for them. Now, these are smaller cases that don't or didn't necessarily have the media coverage in the early days, so they turn to content creators such as myself to raise awareness to make calls to action. I have two not so happy updates here, but one very positive one, so we'll start there with DJ Ficky. DJ Ficky was 28 years old when he was murdered in Walker County in Georgia. Investigators at the time said that the death was a suicide, but his sister and the rest of his family have fought endlessly to prove that this was not the case, pushing for answers. Investigators in those early days made a number of incorrect and premature assumptions. Witness statements and forensic evidence both support the fact this was a murder, not a suicide. According to Local 3 News in 2022, DJ's death was finally changed to homicide, although other sources state that it was just changed to undetermined in 2020, so I'm very unsure which one is correct. Maybe they both are, maybe neither are, but I think it was definitely changed. And then in April 2023, 50-year-old Marshall Payne was indicted before he was arrested in June for DJ's murder. Towards the end of June, Marshall Payne waived his right to an arraignment, meaning that he didn't enter a plea, and it looks like he's not scheduled to return in court until November 6th. DJ had three small children at the time of his death who have now had to grow up without their father, and they got to sit in court and look Marshall Payne right in the eye. Amanda, DJ's sister, said, "We wanted them to see the man who took their dad, but not only that, we wanted him to see his kids." The Ficky family have worked so hard over the past few years. They knew from the get-go here that this was not a case of suicide. They knew who was responsible, and now they're going to get their day in court. It just goes to show what can be done when a family refuse to give up, but at what cost? This has consumed their lives. They never should have had to work this hard in the first place if investigators just did an adequate job. And now we've just got to sit and wait and see what happens. Of course, remember, this is only an arrest. It is innocent until proven guilty. So we are going to have to wait for the trial before we can say anything for sure in this case. Sadly, I have less positive news for you in the case of Alyssa Turney, who disappeared aged 17 in May 2001 from Paradise Valley in Arizona. Her stepfather, Michael Turney, claims that he picked her up from school around lunchtime, but they subsequently had an argument and Alyssa stormed off. Michael Turney claimed he later found a note in her bedroom claiming that she was running away to California, although she did leave all of her personal items, including her phone, behind. A lot of people do not believe his version of events, and since that day, there has never been a single sighting of Alyssa. She disappeared and has now been gone for 22 years and 2 months. For years, Sarah Turney, Alyssa's younger sister, has been fighting for justice, believing that their father is the one responsible for Alyssa's death. Now obviously I detail everything behind this in my original video, but there are plenty of reasons why Sarah and so many others think he is suspicious. And eventually he was indicted and he was charged on second degree murder charges. As I'm filming this video, this news is incredibly fresh, so I don't have loads to share with you. And honestly, I'm just trying my best not to cry as I share this news, but Michael Turney has been acquitted on all murder charges related to Alyssa's presumed death. The trial's been ongoing for the last week or so, and according to ABC 15, the defence asked earlier in the day on Monday for the judge to issue an acquittal based on what they called a lack of evidence. They cited Rule 20 of the Arizona Rules of Criminal Procedure, stating that the court must enter a judgment of acquittal if there is no substantial evidence to support a conviction. Apparently, they claim that instead there was sufficient evidence that Alyssa ran away. And frustratingly, it seems the judge agreed, ruling for a motion of acquittal. All charges against Michael Turney have been dismissed and he's expected to be released over the coming days. Now, this news is a huge blow to Alyssa's family, who have spent years and years fighting for justice for her, particularly for Sarah, who single-handedly raised public awareness for her sister. She utilised TikTok and other social media, making Alyssa's tiny unknown case into a household name within the true crime community. If you're at all interested in true crime, which you probably are if you're watching this video, you will know the name Alyssa Turney and in turn, Sarah Turney. It breaks my heart that this is how the trials ended for them. I really don't know the laws in Arizona around sort of like double jeopardy. I tried to do some research, but it's very unclear. I don't know if an acquittal is equal to a not guilty verdict. So I really don't know if Michael Turney might be able to be recharged in the future if more evidence comes to light. I suspect that he will be able to, because an acquittal is not a not guilty verdict. But again, if anybody does know the answer to that, then please do let me know in the comments down below. In her search for justice for her sister, Sarah has managed to change so many other lives for the better through her podcast and just general activism. So please do go and send her some love on Twitter. There's a lot of sort of unsubstantiated information floating around the internet about this, but until it's coming from the horse's mouth, I'm just going to leave the update there, and I'm sure we will find out more in due course if there's any more to be said. I'm really not sure there is, to be honest. As I'm filming this, I think Sarah has said that her family are going to release a statement, but that statement hasn't come out just yet. And sadly, I have an equally frustrating update for you in the case of Melissa Platt. In October 2008, Melissa Platt was found in a terrible state at her home in her bed after her mother called in a welfare check. She was bruised from head to toe, black eyes, her jaw was broken on both sides, she had a brain bleed, a blood clot, and possible strangulation marks on her neck. After fighting in hospital in the ICU for 9 weeks, Melissa sadly passed away from her injuries on December 17, 2008. Her boyfriend Joey claimed that the injuries were the result of a fall, but doctors claimed there was no way that was correct. The injuries were so severe. And so started a 14-year-long fight for justice. Whatever happened to Melissa was clearly not a fall, so what happened to her? Although the investigators didn't really seem to agree. However, in November 2021, Melissa's case was officially reopened by the Lenore County Sheriff's Office, and it's been very slow moving since then, but this was huge. Michelle, Melissa's sister, has been sending me private updates every now and then, but she's asked me not to share anything publicly. But she did announce on Twitter on July 13th that the assistant DA has decided not to press any charges against Joey, even after he said that the case is very well put together and there is strong evidence to show that Joey did the awful things to her. Michelle goes on to say that the amount of corruption her family has encountered since 2008 is insane. She says the assistant DA works very closely with the original DA who refused to help them for years. Now, I'm going to read almost verbatim from Michelle's second tweet because where's better than from the horse's mouth? What did assistant DA Matt Herring say is the most compelling reason for not pressing charges? He said it's because Melissa allegedly said no when asked if Joey did this to her. There's no actual video or audio proof. This is just what the incompetent detective said she said. Even if she did say no, let's not forget abuse victims lie to cover for their abusers out of fear, and she was very afraid of him. Also, she had a traumatic brain injury, jaw broken on both sides, teeth broken and smashed out, and she also apparently said she was in a car accident, which she wasn't, and she also was talking about huge bugs crawling around the room. She was in and out of it, on strong medications, and he's ignoring all the strong evidence in his own words, just because she allegedly said one word, no, in the midst of horrific injuries. Let's be real, how much talking could she possibly have been doing with all those injuries? The death certificate was changed from undetermined to homicide due to assault by another person, and Joey is admittedly the only one that was around her. The assistant DA said he has an ethical duty to uphold the law and refuses to take it to trial, and also flat out refuses to present the evidence to a grand jury to see if they would indict. Something smells fishy here. Yet again, we're hitting a wall. Michelle is now looking for anyone with any contacts in media to help her. She's refusing to stop in her quest for justice for her sister.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Now, I know that myself, Kendall Ray, and Daniel Hallen have all done videos on Melissa's case, but if you want to go and make video requests with other creators, that would be incredible. If they have a request form, go and ask them to talk about Melissa. Leave comments on their videos. Let's use our collective power to actually get something done here. We can help get Michelle and Melissa's voices heard. What happened to Melissa was not the result of a fall. Finally, I want to end on a massive update in the case of the Lisk, the Long Island serial killer, Gilgo Beach killer, whatever you know this case as. I genuinely never thought I'd be able to come at you with this update, but someone has been arrested for the murders, or at least some of the murders. Again, I would like to remind us all that an arrest is just an arrest. We can't accuse anyone of anything until the case has been heard in court and the jury returns their verdict. But there is information to share in this case nonetheless. So in the evening of Thursday the 13th of July 2023, 59-year-old Rex Huerman was arrested in Manhattan and he was swiftly taken into custody on Long Island. He was charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 3 counts of second-degree murder in the deaths of Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman and Amber Costello, who make up 3 of the original Gilgo Beach 4. He's also strongly considered to be a prime suspect in the 4th murder of Maureen Brainard Barnes, but charges haven't been made for that as of yet, although that investigation is continuing and expects to be resolved soon. For a brief overview of these crimes, the Long Island serial killings make up a series of murders between 1996 and 2011, in which the remains of up to 18 people were found on or in the general vicinity of Gilgo Beach, Long Island. Most of the known victims were sex workers who advertised their services on Craigslist and then just went missing one day. Although the timeline of the crimes is so long, none of the remains be found until 2010-2011, when Shannon Gilbert went missing near Ocean Parkway, resulting in a search for her. Which is when, in December 2010, they came across the bodies of 4 victims who would be designated the Gilgo Beach 4, the 4 women I mentioned just a moment ago. In March and April 2011, they came across more remains, which they believe predated those found in Gilgo, and many of those victims remain unidentified to this day. Shannon's remains were found in December 2011, just half a mile from where she disappeared. The big question has always been, was it the same person responsible for all of these crimes? Were there two serial killers operating in this area? Are the Lisk and Gilgo Beach killer one? And it honestly still doesn't really seem like authorities have the answer to that, or at least if they do, that information hasn't been released publicly as I'm filming this. I have no doubt between my filming this on the 19th of July and this episode going live in 1 week's time, there is going to be more information coming out, but just keep an eye on my shorts for all of that information. So Rex Heumann has been a longtime resident of Massapequa, Long Island, but he was actually an architect working in Midtown Manhattan, which is where he was when he was swarmed and arrested by a number of plainclothed officers. On the Friday morning, officers went into his house and removed a number of items as part of the investigation, and now a 32-page bail application form has been released publicly, which details a lot of the prosecution's case against him. In January 2022, the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office assigned an experienced team of investigators and prosecutors to work along with a whole load of other agencies to take a brand new look at the Lisk case. This was a comprehensive review of every item of evidence and piece of information undertaken by this team. On March 14, 2022, this led to the discovery of a first-generation Chevrolet Avalanche that was registered to Rex Heumann at the time of the murders. A witness to the disappearance of Amber Costello identified that type of car as being driven by her potential killer. And this led to a comprehensive investigation of Heumann, consisting of over 300 subpoenas, search warrants, and other legal processes. And in this, they found cell phone billing records corresponding to cell site locations for 1, the burner phones used to arrange meetings with 3 of the 4 victims, 2, the taunting calls made to a sister of Melissa's after her death, 3, a call made by a detective to Melissa's phone whilst looking into her disappearance, and 4, calls checking voicemail on Maureen's phone after her disappearance. Heumann also lived in Massapequa Park, where the victims were believed to have disappeared from, and he worked in Midtown Manhattan, where the taunting calls were made to Melissa's sister. Both Heumann and the burner phone records had significant connections to Midtown Manhattan and Massapequa Park. Now, the bail form goes into the cell phone stuff in a lot more detail, but like that's the main crux of it. And then there's also a witness in Amber Costello's case. Now, Amber was last seen alive on the 2nd of September 2010, but the day before that, her phone was contacted by a burner phone. They had communications between 11:33 and 11:34 p.m, connecting to a cell site tower in West Amityville and Massapequa Park. After that, the burner phone travelled to West Babylon, which is in proximity to where Amber lived. The phones also had communication at 12:05 a.m. Around the time of these communications, a client showed up at Amber's home. She was a sex worker. After the client entered the home, a ruse was executed whereby a person pretending to be Amber's outraged boyfriend came in and got mad. The client left whilst Amber was able to hold on to his money. The client in question was later described as a large white male, about 6'4 to 6'6 in height, in his mid-40s, with dark bushy hair and big oval-style 1970s type glasses. Another witness described him as looking like an ogre. And a witness also noted a first-generation Chevrolet Avalanche parked in the driveway. At about 1:18 a.m. on September 2nd, the same burner phone sent a message to Amber's phone asking for credit next time, and that phone was located in Massapequa Park. According to a witness, later on September 2nd, Amber was contacted by the same client again. He told her that he wanted to see her but didn't want to come back to her house because of her boyfriend, and then the burner phone travelled back to West Babylon at around 11:17 p.m. Amber left her home, leaving her own phone behind, and shortly after this, a witness observed a dark-coloured truck pass the house, coming from the direction that Amber had just walked in. And there's more as well. So travel records show that Heumann's wife would often be out of the country or the state when the murders took place. When Melissa disappeared, she was in Iceland. When Megan disappeared, she was in Maryland. When Amber disappeared, she was in New Jersey. And then there's also Heumann's own travel. Someone was using Melissa's phone consistently after her death. On August 10, 2009, Heumann travelled to Iceland and all phone activity on Melissa's phone stopped. On the 18th of August, he returned from Iceland and then phone activity resumed the next day. Human's internet history also shows fake Tinder profiles connected with fake names, email addresses, and identities. A search warrant served on one of these junk email addresses revealed a number of very concerning searches relating to sex workers, sadistic torture porn, and child pornography. I'm not going to share the exact searches here, but it's not good. The same email account was also used to conduct 200 searches between March 2022 and June 2023 related to serial killers and the known murders of the Gilgo Beach Four, as well as searching for related podcasts and documentaries. And then, of course, there's the DNA evidence. The main forensic evidence found at the crime scene included a hair found on Maureen, two hairs found on Megan, and one on Amber, all of which were sent to a forensic lab for testing. Around July 2022, they were able to determine that each of the hairs belonged to a female who wasn't any of the victims. Around the 21st of July 2022, an undercover detective recovered 11 bottles from a bin left for collection outside Human's home. They took swabs, which were sent for testing, and in February 2023, it was concluded that a female within the home matched the same mitochondrial haplogroup as whoever the hairs belonged to. And then in March, a second specialist forensic lab was able to do more testing, and they concluded that whilst 99.98% of the North American population can be excluded from the female hair on Costello, and 99.68% can be excluded as female hair on Waterman, Human's wife cannot be excluded from either.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Seeing as she was undeniably out of town at the time of the murders, it's believed that the burlap, tape, vehicles, or other instruments used in the murders came from the Human residence. And there's also a male hair that was found on Megan Waterman as well. Following the discovery of the Chevrolet Avalanche and the phone records, a surveillance team were watching Human very, very carefully. On January 26, 2023, the team watched as he threw away a pizza box on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, and they quickly went to retrieve it. This was sent to the Suffolk County Crime Lab for analysis, where a swab was taken from the leftover pizza crust. Around June 12th, they were able to determine that the mitochondrial DNA profile between the hair and the crust were the same, excluding 99.96% of the North American population. And so, on the evening of July 13th, 2023, he was arrested. At the time of his arrest, he had on him the burner phone linked to the fake email account used to conduct those terrifying online searches. Based on the serious nature of these offences, the people have asked the defendant is to remain on bail without remand. Human has denied all the charges against him, his defence lawyer Michael Brown saying in a statement that he is a loving husband to his wife of over 25 years and an involved and dedicated father to his daughter and stepson. There is nothing about Mr. Human that would suggest he is involved in these incidents. And while the government has decided to focus on him despite more significant and stronger leads, we are looking forward to defending him in a court of law before a fair and impartial jury of his peers. Of course, I want to state again that this is just an arrest at this point. We cannot say whether Human is guilty or not guilty until he's been seen in a court of law. The information I've shared in this video is simply from the publicly available bail document. There is still a long way to go with this case, and my thought and love is going out to all the families of the victims because they must be going through it right now. Potentially being able to get justice here must bring up huge emotion for them, but this is going to be a very long and arduous road, I'm sure. There are also rumours and speculations coming out about Human being potentially linked to other murders from across the country. Police forces in Las Vegas and South Carolina are confirming their involvement in the case. I don't want to speculate too much on that until we have some more solid information, so I'm not going to. Wild speculation isn't going to help anyone, so I'm just going to leave that up to the investigators for now. I know this episode's been a long one, so if you stuck around to the very end, thank you so much for sticking with me. I truly, truly believe that our interest in these cases shouldn't just begin and end with the original video. Like, we are making these videos, we are watching these videos to try and educate ourselves, to bring awareness, and hopefully one day see a conclusion. And in many of these cases I've shared today, we are now one step closer to that conclusion. In others, there has been some setbacks, but that doesn't mean that it's over for good. There is always a chance. Again, a huge thank you to MyHeritage for sponsoring this video. Please make sure you check them out in the top line of the description. And I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.